Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome one and all to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's State of the Union Tuesday, Jim. I know you'll be sitting with some Democratic friend of yours somewhere watching this speech because all good Americans apparently will be doing that. The good martini today is that we are fired up for the speech. Not the president's speech, the speech from this guy.
It raids $500 billion out of Medicare, not to shore up Medicare solvency, but to spend on this new government program. Now, when you take a look at what this does is, according to the chief actuary of Medicare, he's saying as much as 20% of Medicare's providers will either go out of business or will have to stop seeing Medicare beneficiaries.
House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, just an absolute whiz on the fiscal issues. He's articulate. He can go toe-to-toe with Obama. Obviously, they won't be going toe-to-toe this evening, but this is a guy who can match the president, certainly rhetorically, and in my estimation at least, is way above him in terms of intellectual firepower. So I'm looking forward to the Republicans coming forward with a good speech and an excellent choice. I know we thought that about Bobby Jindal, and his performance a couple years ago wasn't the greatest, but I think Paul Ryan is the best choice coming out of the blocks here with the new Congress.
I think you're partially right, Greg. I'm going to slightly disagree in that I cannot summon any enthusiasm for watching the State of the Union tonight. The only thing I'll be looking for is that with this new Democrat-Republican seating arrangement is to see whether people start fighting over the armrests. No, you get the one to the left. Now you take it to the right. No, left. The one thing I think Ryan will do a fine job, and in fact, I think the deck is stacked so much in terms of the State of the Union and the response to the State of the Union, the different venues, the different audiences for it, et cetera, that there's no point in even trying to play the optics game. And that I think that the best thing that that Paul Ryan can do, and that really any Republican who's giving a response to a typically grandiose "the state of our union is strong, yay!" speech, is to just go out and make your case. Lay out the facts, and you know, Ryan's is going to be sober. It may be a little bit depressing. It's going to be a lot of the hard choices that I strongly suspect President Obama is going to avoid in his speech. We've already heard that in this speech, Obama is going to effectively throw his deficit commission under the bus. So my guess is that tonight we'll get a lot of rainbows and unicorns and, you know, everything is fine. Let's just work together in a bipartisan manner, yada, 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 that will probably, you know, get good reviews. Everyone will like it, but it will not really be all that serious in terms of dealing with the scale of the fiscal problems we face today.
Certainly true. And just to follow up on a couple of points that you made, Jim, I, for one, in addition to just enjoying Paul Ryan tonight and perhaps a couple moments in the president's speech, we'll find out, is just that hopefully this veneer of sitting together and just this nauseating facade of bipartisanship, as if that's going to overcome fundamental differences about the role of government and the amount of freedom people ought to be allowed to have, that sitting together is going to have something to do with that. My other regret is that Paul Ryan and the president won't be going head-to-head, because for those who remember Paul Ryan at the healthcare forum at the Blair House last year before it got rammed down our throats through the democratically controlled House and Senate, Paul Ryan laid out in part what we heard just a moment ago, and here was the president's articulate response to that, sans teleprompter.
I'm going to call on Javier Becerra, but I just want to follow up on a couple points. There are some strong disagreements on the numbers here, Paul, and you know, but I don't want to get too bogged down. And
so,
Paul, you're making the case that my numbers are horsebucky, and your numbers are absolutely true. I don't want to get bogged down in who's right and who's wrong, so we're just going to pretend. We're just going to ignore this and move along to one of my friends. Congressman, speak quickly. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's. I think the recurring line is that he said he'd get back to Ryan, and we're still waiting for him to get back to him.
Yeah, hopefully Ryan's not waiting up at night waiting for that phone call to come through, especially now that the deal has been done. But on to the bad martini today, Jim. And you know, it was just a few weeks ago where you said hopefully the Republicans will keep their mistakes limited and not spend them right away. And then, of course, the very next day we talked about the two that actually missed taking the oath on the House floor. And now we're hearing about a scandal that is involving ethics, and now the Democrats are seizing on this. Florida Congressman David Rivera, apparently the story goes that he took a loan from his mother's business, didn't necessarily report that. Now he's paid it back. Democrats still trying to make hay out of this because of the Republicans' no-tolerance policy for ethical issues following their condemnation of Charlie Rangel. So is this going to be something that tars the party as well, they're just like all the Democrats and all the people that have been crooks in the past, or is this pretty small stuff?
No, it's certainly not encouraging. It's certainly, if you're supposed to report something and you don't, that definitely does not instill confidence. I guess it's worth noting that, you know, Florida's Department of Law Enforcement is investigating it, and my attitude would be, let's let them investigate it. I have this sneaking suspicion that it'll be a circumstance in which, if it turns out to be something there and genuine wrongdoing, at the, you know, at the very least looks like not reporting something you should, which would be a violation of House rules. Then let's let an appropriate punishment come out. If it turns out that there's some sort of legitimate explanation or misunderstanding or something where, you know, he's not as guilty as he might appear to be at first glance, I'd hate to have another Ted Stevens circumstance in which a guy gets drummed out of the U.S. Congress for something that turns out to not be true. So, you know, it's not encouraging. It's not reassuring. It's kind of frustrating. But let's let the legal process work out and, you know, get more facts out there and see where this goes. The idea that the DCCC is going to have any standing to kind of, you know, get in high moral dudgeon over this is pretty laughable. But, I guess Rangel will be the guy leading the charge on this, huh?
Yeah, exactly. The paragon of virtue and ethical behavior. The thing that's not looking good for Mr. Rivera, at least according to one of the articles I read today, is that Eric Cantor and some of his deputies are already thinking of who from that district would be a good replacement for him. Not exactly.
That's a bad indicator when all of a sudden your phone calls aren't returned. And they're saying, who would be a better version of you?
Right.
Cleaner version of you.
Yeah, probably not the way you want to start out your congressional career. And unfortunately, it may not be a very long one. But we'll see how that plays out. Speaking of getting elected, a whole sorts of different things could be coming down the pike here in the Chicago mayoral race for a third and crazy martini. Rahm Emanuel basically cleared the field. He seemed to have his eligibility questions cleared up by the Chicago Board of Elections. And now all of a sudden, an appellate court in Illinois saying, hey, you haven't been a resident of the city for the past year. That's the law. You can't actually be on the ballot. Here's Rahm Emanuel's response yesterday.
I still own a home here. Look forward to moving into it one day. Vote from here. Pay property taxes here. I do believe that the people of the city of Chicago deserve the right to make a decision of who they want to be their next mayor.
Now, if the law is that you actually have to reside there, should your defense be that I actually hope to live at some point in the house that I own in the city?
First of all, Greg, are you sure that was Rahm? There were a couple words missing. I didn't hear any bleeps. I didn't hear, you know. I had figured that when I heard the news yesterday that at this point he was engaged in some sort of profanity alchemy, inventing new four-letter words to so appropriately describe the frustration and anger that he felt at that moment. I guess I can see both sides of this. My attitude would be instinctively is that the law is the law, and if you haven't lived there for a year, you know, sorry, pal, you don't live there. You don't meet the qualifications. And by the way, this eliminates any possibility of a write-in opportunity because the requirement is to serve in office, not merely to be elected or to be on the ballot.
Right.
And the second thing is where his points are all perfectly valid, that he's got long, deep roots in Chicago. But on the other hand, I don't think, you know, he or anybody else would really argue that for the past 2 years, his mind has been in Chicago. His mind has been in the White House working with President Obama. And there's a possibility to say that if you really haven't lived in a city for the past 2 years, you may not be the best choice for that city's mayor. Now, considering the other alternatives are Carol Moseley Braun and an arrangement of other, you know, local Chicago machine Democrats, the appeal of Rahm Emanuel becomes a little bit clearer.
Right.
But there's a part of me that it feels like, you know, I think it was Mary Catherine Hamm had described it in the Observing. It's kind of like when you're watching, you know, Paris Hilton go to court. You're just surprised to see a celebrity get held account to the same laws that the rest of us do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of pleasing to see that. So there's a part of me that feels like, I guess it'll go up to the Illinois Supreme Court. As one of the blogs I quoted in the Morning Jolt said, look, Rahm and the Democrats are going to win at the Illinois Supreme Court because they still have the receipt from when they purchased it.
Right.
But intriguing that in Chicago, of all places, Rahm Emanuel, the president's, you know, right-hand man, is being held up to follow the law. And that's kind of a surprising redefinition of the Chicago way, isn't it, Greg?
It is. My favorite part of the Rahm Emanuel logic was, well, the deadline for printing the ballot is coming up before the Supreme Court's likely to hand down decision. So let's just put my name on the ballot. And then if we have to deal with it and they rule against me, then we'll have some issues with it and we'll figure out what to do then. So either he's...
Let's just assume I won and then we can hold the legal argument.
Classic. I wish I could say it was only in Chicago, but it certainly happens in Chicago. If only he had a few people close to him that had some authority here in Washington to maybe help him out as
if
well.
If only he had some friends in high places, yep.
Exactly. So while Rahm sweats it out, we'll be reluctantly watching the President's State of the Union tonight and having full commentary on that tomorrow, I'm sure. So, Jim, enjoy your evening with your liberal friend at your side, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Sounds good. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the 3 Martini Lunch.